Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to a July 10th segment from the Kentucky Water Fuel Museum. Tonight's guest, who has not joined us yet from New Zealand, is Jonathan Eisen, the author of the what should be famous book entitled Suppressed Inventions and Other Discoveries. And since Mr. Eisen has not yet joined us, I'd like to read a review or two found at Amazon.com about this book. By the way, it looks like you can get a copy of this book for $14 and a used copy for around $9.25. So I would definitely recommend that you take a look at this gem of information. It looks like Mr. Eisen may be with us now. Let's see.
Yep.
Hello, Jonathan.
Hi, James.
Hello, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Sorry, I'm a little bit late. I had a little trouble with this this card that I got to call you. I have 336 minutes though, so we're cool.
Okay, well, we're only going to use 60 of them.
Thank God for that.
It's very nice that we're able to have you as a guest because I greatly admire.
The honor's mine. The pleasure's mine. We're here to help each other. And to honor each other's presence in working for good things and in the truth and all those sort of things, but it's true. You have a great website and you're making a great effort, and you know that something good is going to happen.
Well, that's the interesting thing. All of us have different expectations of what our efforts in trying to introduce clean or even free energy to mankind. We have different expectations of what is going to be the final outcome of this. But it seems like it's the right thing to do, even if we don't necessarily believe that humankind is going to pick itself up by the bootstraps and solve this problem on its own.
Well, there is no such thing as humankind. Hey, James, wait, hold on. Wait a second. Before we get into generalizations, I don't believe in humankind. I believe in one person at a time. And if you look at the changes that have been made historically, the good ones and the bad ones, they've usually emanated from a very small group of people.
Interesting observation.
A conspiracy, if you will. I'm a conspiracy theorist. No.
You're
sorry,
James. You're a conspiracy theorist. You're a conspiracy...
factualist.
Get to the bottom of it. Why don't we start out with your early beginnings in this? Because not everyone has written a book on suppressed inventions. In fact, I don't think there are many books throughout the history of mankind that have been written on the suppression of valuable technology. Yours is one
there's only a few of them. There's only a few of them. I've done two of them. I did two editions, completely different editions of suppressed inventions.
I didn't know that.
The first one was 1994. I basically was a prototype that I edited and published here in Auckland and because I couldn't get a publisher for it in America. Everybody said, well, it won't sell, this and that, all that sort of bullshit. And I said, well, okay, I will self-publish it here, and I did under the auspices of Auckland Institute of Technology Press, which I was the publisher of. In fact, I founded the press here. It's New Zealand's biggest. Now it's a university of technology, but it used to be simply an institute of technology. Before then it was just a trade school. Back when in the old days when it was honest, you know what I'm saying. Now it's a university of technology, and it's not that honest anymore. Anywho, we published the first edition of Suppressed Inventions back then, and it did very well down here. It really took off in New Zealand. It made number 3 on the bestseller list. So I went to my friend in America, who's a publisher, and I said, "Hey, Rudy, look, you were wrong. You know, it's number 3 on the bestseller list, and you were wrong. And eat crow. And here it is. And you want to do it?" And he said, "Yes, you'll do another edition, though." So I did. It's about 80% new. The one I did for Rudy, which was in 1999, and that was also called Suppressed Inventions, and Rudy's publishing company was let's see, what Avery? The hell is it? It's called Square One Press now. It used to be called Avery. It was a big health food press or whatever, you know, health-oriented press. Sorry, I didn't mean
you know,
to.
That was, and Avery was purchased by Penguin, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Avery was purchased by Penguin Putnam. Everybody's, you know, they go around purchasing each other's assets or something. And now it's huge. And there's still you know, it's still in print, lo these many years later.
Oh, your book is still in print by Penguin Putnam?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why it's available on Amazon as a new book.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was under the assumption that both Gene Manning's book and your book were both pulled from publication by them when they bought Avery.
No.
But that's not correct.
No, what you're buying off of Amazon is the edition that's still in print, published by whatchamacallit, Penguin Putnam.
That's right. It deserves to be in print. It's an excellent book.
It deserves to be publicized. It deserves to sell billions of copies.
In fact, I was just doing some work for a dentist this evening, okay?
Yeah.
And I told him about our interview coming up. And what I find is that people should be interested, as you said. They should be interested, but they are not necessarily inclined to even look into the matter.
And well, dentists have all this mercury in their head. It's amazing they can walk and chew gum at the same time.
Well,
you know, I mean, don't use dentists as a good example of anybody who should have an open mind. You know, you go, I mean, the dentist here is still using mercury and fluoride, for Pete's sake. And they're pushing it, you know, and no matter how much evidence you throw in their face, all of which is peer-reviewed and footnoted up the wazoo, you know, they don't want to hear about it. And that's really interesting. And I for your listeners, I also edit a magazine now called Uncensored, which is basically a spinoff of Suppressed Inventions, and it's a quarterly, color quarterly, and you can have a look at it on Google. Just hit Uncensored. I think we were number one the other day for the word. Anywho, long story short, the lead edit in Uncensored this month is why people get pleasure from holding on to fictitious notions of factuality, and are why they feel threatened by new information which is likely to unravel their paradigm. And this neuroscientist actually did a scan of people's brains. I'm serious, James. They did a scan of these brains and found that their pleasure centers went off when they were in denial. When somebody gave them an inconvenient fact, and I don't want to get into Al Gore here right now, but they give them an inconvenient fact, and by denying that inconvenient fact, even though it was true, the little light went on in the pleasure center of their brain, which tells you a hell of a lot about why things are the way they are.
Well, I'll tell you, I came to that conclusion long before that study was done. I was sitting
This is the first study that actually showed the light going on in that particular pleasure center. It's neurologically verifiable.
Well, let me tell you an experience I had. I was sitting beside an elderly lady on an airplane, and we were having a discussion about a controversial subject. And whenever I presented evidence to her that she'd never considered before, she put her hand to her forehead and she said, "Excuse me, I have a headache."
Oh, okay, that is the opposite, right? I mean, it's the same, but the opposite.
She did that several times during this about 4-hour flight. She wanted to talk. She would continue to bring the subject up, but each time there was like a stab in her brain. Or,
right, yeah, yeah. Well, what you're talking about here, James, is mind control, aren't you? And by any other name, that's the boil down. It's mind control. And what you have to realize here in the Middle Ages where we're living right now is not only do they have the Inquisition still alive and well, but people are still as damn closed and mind-controlled as they were back then, and probably a great deal more. It's fascinating. I mean, I've made a lifelong study of not only the phenomenon itself of turning off and going into denial, but the actual whys and wherefores. And holy shit, man. It's amazing anybody can walk and chew gum in Western Civ right now. And I of course, include America, Land of the Free, Home of the Brave in that.
Yeah. In fact, why don't we get down to the roots of that? I usually like to ask my guests how they got initially interested, and I want to get back to your roots because I think whatever led you on this path of discovery with regard to impression of good information is something that others should try to, if they can somehow harness that spark of interest in something that, as you say, people go through life with blinders on, without even thinking about taking them off, not even realizing they have them on.
And it's not their fault, really, because nobody is taught to take responsibility for their own thoughts. People are taught to blame others, but never to take how to take responsibility for your own thoughts. You know, and this is, I believe, the crux of the matter.
You mean the herd mentality allows us to say, I'm not required to know about that.
I'm not required to change. I'm not required to know. I'm not required to be responsible for what I'm thinking. It's somebody else. It's something else. And everything, and this is really weird, James, you know, everything is militating, not everything, of course, but so many things are militating toward etching this particular syndrome into concrete. Where you have water that's fluoridated, okay, fine. That where you have one out of every six kids on Ritalin, okay, that's another one. Where you have chemtrails, God only knows, and what the hell is that all about? Where you have Fox News reinforcing a completely faux, FAUX, view of the world, all right? Where you have everybody lying to you all the time, it becomes the apotheosis of the Nazi wet dream, which was the big lie, and everybody is a slave. Well, that's exactly what's transpiring right now, and not only is that upsetting to the max, I mean totally upsetting, but it's making life a great deal more inconvenient for billions of people than it has to be already.
One thing is, it's very obvious, is we're all being made poorer, literally, not just intellectually or spiritually, but we are being made poorer literally by the control that's taking place, that we're being corralled.
Well, what do you mean, financially less able?
Poorer.
It's
just as the price of energy alone, not to mention all the other corporate ripoffs that are taking place.
Well, that's the whole idea. That you see, the agenda, as your listeners must know already, is basically to destroy the United States.
You think
and
so?
And
who's behind it? Is it foreign entities that are behind this?
Oh Jesus! Ha! Now you're getting to who's at the top of the pyramid, right?
Well, I mean, obviously, I would say someone like Satan.
Yeah, but there is a satanic agenda going on here. There is no doubt. All right, it is. I really wish that they could get the help that they really need, because these people are a bunch of sick fucks, and let's face it, they have the whole thing wrong. However, you know, if they're not going to face the fact that the creative the principle and practice of love is the only place really to spend your life if you want to evolve your soul and all that sort of stuff. If they don't get that, then they should get the hell off the planet. You know, I mean, really, leave us alone. This is ridiculous. You know, I mean, whoever's in charge is such a bunch of control freaks that you'd think that they could at least realize one morning they wake up and they go, oh, I think I need help, you know, but they don't. They don't admit it. They don't want to admit it. They represent the dark side, Luke, and they're bringing a hideous destruction on the planet and dare I say billions of people while they're at it. And if they're into a destructive agenda, I wish they'd stop. And what got me into this, and this is a long way of getting back to your original question, what got me into it was a terrible sense of something being wrong when I was born here. I said, holy shit, something's really wrong. And I think every kid knows this in their heart of hearts. They know that it's wrong. They know the war is wrong, the poisons are wrong, they know the vaccines are wrong, and they know that, you know, their parents are wrong. They just don't, you know, understand why it is they were born here in a situation where they still have all this war going on. Hello?
I think you're taking for granted that more people had the kind of enlightened realization that you had when you were young.
I'm not. I'm saying every
kind of thought.
Sorry, I'm saying that every kid realizes this intuitively.
But it's suppressed.
Eventually. Every step along the way in your socialization process, and that's an interesting word, isn't it? Every step along the way, your creative, your love, your imaginative imagination is turned off from schools, from parents, from jobs, uniforms. You know, what is that uniform stuff, man? People are getting into, you know, they're wearing uniforms in school here so that they can go and work at a bank and have a uniform and so they can think like everybody else and be uniform. And, you know, you have a look at the American dime, all right? On the back, I don't know if it's still there. I haven't been back in many years. But on the back of the dime, they used to have all these sheaves of whatever there is, wheat, all bundled up. There's a bundle of stuff. You have a dime in your pocket? Is it still there?
You know what?
Anyhow,
I spent the last dime here a few minutes ago.
Well, all right. Well, whatever. But basically, you know, it's a symbol of fascism. And if you look up fascism in the dictionary when it was 1936, it just means bundled together. All right?
Huh.
When people stop thinking for themselves and get themselves bundled together, which happens very early on, in the socialization process, you're going to get the preconditions for groupthink, for, as you said, the hive mentality. And that's what's going on now. That's why your fellow passenger puts her hand to her forehead, right? Because she represents the ultimate in hive mentality, which is a whole shitload of people actually believing that they can kill other people and get away with it because the state says it's all right to do that. Nobody ever questions that. How come, you know, we got an army who think they're indoctrinated into believing that they can kill other people and it's okay because they're ordered to do that. What the hell is this, an ant colony? Sorry, that's my New York talking.
Yeah, well, speaking of that, so you're living in New Zealand, but I did want to point out that you are from, I guess, New York, huh?
I guess, therefore, I am.
Okay, and so at some point you immigrated to New Zealand and you stayed there for quite some time.
Yeah, about 21 years now or more.
Okay. Now, there seems to be an opinion that
New Zealand
and Australia are more progressive countries with regard to alternative energy. Do you find that to be
the case? Well, I think any country is more progressive than the United States right now. But New Zealand and Australia is still part of the empire. Don't get it.
In other words, you can't escape it.
Well, not easily, because you know, it's part of the matrix.
Well, from what I remember, there was a gentleman who saw World War II brewing, and he went to where he thought he would be free from the effects of the war. He went to Guadalcanal.
Great. Sorry, that's very funny. Very funny. Your listeners may not know that that was one of the biggest battlefields in World War II.
Yeah, but before
that, it was
that,
the turning point when the Yanks turned around the Japanese once and for all. It was a major battle. It was right out. You're right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It was the epitome of tropical paradise prior to that battle.
That's right. Yes, I'm going to Guadalcanal.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's very good. Oh, God, I don't know.
Because you know that I opened a museum in Kentucky that told the history of turning water into fuel.
Yeah.
Your book was a major source of information. Let's face it, you cannot go to a public library and find a book that talks about all the patents and all the inventors who've turned water into fuel.
Yeah.
Even though we live in a society that claims to be technologically advanced, We have hundreds of universities that teach science and chemistry.
They're not
telling the public that people have filed patents in the United States and abroad.
That's right.
For cars that run on hydrogen from water. Now, your book
and cars there are cars that run on water without making hydrogen.
Yeah, let's talk about those two things, because we've started out on the other foot talking about suppression in general and humans' problems with
that. Sure. Jesus Christ, I don't know where to begin, but basically in 1994, a friend of mine named Duncan Rhodes, who edits another very good magazine called Nexus. I don't know if you get that over there or not.
Where does Nexus originate from?
Australia.
Okay, it comes from Australia. Okay.
Yeah. Duncan is probably the second best editor in the world, the first being me, of course.
Now, Nexus magazine then deals with other things other than alternative energy, but that's one of the
things. Oh, yeah, so do we. Okay. But you know, it's, as I said, it's part of a large gestalt of things. You know, you suppress, if you're into, as I said, we're in the Middle Ages. Truth is getting suppressed wherever it possibly raises its beautiful head, and the sooner you realize that everything is a hologram for the whole thing, that is to say, you take one detail, examine it closely enough, and it becomes a hologram. It's replicated everywhere, okay?
In other words, you're saying that alternative medicine is suppressed in the same way that alternative energy is suppressed?
Absolutely.
Okay.
That's right. As the same way as imagination is suppressed in the young people in when they go to school, the same way ethics is suppressed and when you go into business or the army, the same way your spirit is suppressed by every time you go outside and look at all the neon and the cars and the devastation and the destruction. It's a spiritually depressing sort of place. So how the hell do you keep truth alive in this particular era? Well, that's a very interesting question, even if I had to ask it myself. You do the best you can in any moment, in every moment that you're alive. You just do the best you can. And as I said before, you start taking responsibility for your thoughts. If you have thoughts that you don't like, you change the thought and you forgive yourself for not for having a thought that wasn't really very good. Sorry. Go ahead.
There are plenty of people who want to go through life without the thought process that you were just describing.
Well, sure, that's their prerogative.
But
it's their prerogative. It's our prerogative to shut down all of our functions and to go to sleep watching Fox fucking News every night or whatever you watch, and to stay a slave or to become a slave and your children become slaves and there you go, and that's your prerogative to do that. But it's also your choice to wake up and smell whatever you want to smell, the sweat socks.
Okay,
the fact of the matter is that we have an educational and industrial system that is predicated on the suppression of these kinds of technologies that you're talking about. In fact, and I'll go on record again saying this, the dirtier, the more inappropriate the product, the more likely it will be marketed mainstream. The cleaner, the product, the more health and life giving, the less likely it will find its way to mainstream, and the more likely it will be suppressed.
Yeah,
and everybody listening into
that,
this conversation knows that.
That right there, to me, is the satanic element.
That's right.
Why does evil exist and why does it flourish? There you go. You know.
That's right.
That's the
nutshell.
Would do this. You know.
What?
But anyway, that's my religion.
I didn't hear that last thing you said.
I say it doesn't seem to me that humans of their own would be doing these things. It seems to
no,
me
on their own accord, of course not. Of course not. People like to live. Palestinians, Israelis. When I lived in New York, man, we had a little group of people: Israelis, Palestinians, Egyptians, Italians. We hung out at this Middle Eastern restaurant, had a wonderful time, and everybody was a New Yorker. All right.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So let's ask this then: when did you first personally witness an alternative
94.
Energy device, an over-unity device, a water fuel device?
Yeah, wait a minute. The first time was up in Vermont in 95. I just remember, not 95, it must have been 75. Well, there you go. There goes 20 years. Yeah, the DeForest brothers had a Buick that was getting about 80 or 90 miles a gallon, and they drove it down to Washington to the EPA to show them, and nobody would look at it.
High mileage carburetor? Is that it?
Yeah, that was one of the high mileage carburetors. Yeah.
Fashioned after Pogue's carburetor, or?
I don't know how that one worked, but it was probably a vapor carburetor. Those carbines are still out there now, and there are some very interesting people experimenting with it. The second
one.
How
did you become aware of that particular one? Was that in the news, or did you know those people, or what?
Yeah, it was in the news, and they were in Richmond, Vermont, and it was local news, and I was into local news back then, and. You know, I've always been a little bit of a journalist.
Did you personally go check the story out, or how did you become acquainted with it?
No, I never met the DeForest brothers, but that was first. No, I didn't, and I didn't check it out. I was working.
In other words,
it
opened your eyes.
Yeah, that's right. I probably should have gone to check it out, but I don't know. I was working for another inventor at the time, and he had an engine that was basically running on air. I was such a novice. I had just moved up to Vermont from New York, and I didn't know shit from second base about any of this stuff. But I knew that there was
an air motor.
Yeah, it was sort of like the Negre motors that are running today. You know, the ZeroPollution.com.
Is that like a compressed tank of air then?
Yeah.
Causing
yeah. Yeah.
I just saw some interesting information on those. Guy running a motorcycle on a scuba tank.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen any.
No, I haven't.
Yeah. This is coming from Brazil, I think.
Well, there you go. It's happening all over the world. I've personally witnessed several magnetic motors. And as I said, I went to Australia to have a look at the Joe cell, and I spent 3 days with Joey.
Okay, and that's what we really want to talk about now, because there's a lot of misinformation, apparently disinformation that's been spread about the Joe cell. So you're saying that in 1994 you traveled to Australia to personally investigate the claims?
On Duncan called me up, or I called Duncan, and we talked very frequently back then, and he said if I wanted to see a guy running his car on water alone, I'd better get my ass over to Australia and have a look at it, because the guy was under a death threat.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, when you say Duncan, again, you're referring to the editor, the publisher of Nexus magazine.
That's right.
Okay, so you got on a plane from New Zealand and flew just to hop over to Australia.
Yeah, we went over. I brought my mechanic with me because, you know, I'm a researcher and pretty good, but I'm an amateur mechanic and not so good, but you know, I know my way around an engine. But I wanted verification on this one. I wanted somebody who had qualifications. So my friend Neil came with me over to Australia, and we went down to go see the Joe cell.
And where was it actually?
Say what?
What part of Australia was this?
It was in northern New South Wales.
Okay. And how did Joe originally get interested in this technology? How did he discover his cell?
Joey had an epiphany much the same as Tesla did. He was in a coma for a while. And when he came out of the coma, I think he was hit by a car or he had an illness, I don't remember. But when he got well, he had this epiphany, if you will, and he started fooling around with hydrogen. It's all on his website or on oupower.com. But just Google up the Joe cell, and there's some very interesting autobiographical material on there.
Okay, first of all, I'm going to have to Google up the word epiphany. It's not something I use often. Does that mean he had a vision or a dream?
Yeah, that's good. An epiphany is basically a blinding insight, you know? Sort of like allegedly St. Paul had on the way to Damascus.
Okay. Well, I think that humans, because of the way that our brains are wired, we are capable of visualizing solutions to problems. I mean, it's part of our birthright is being made in the image of the great creator, inventor, you know?
Or inventors.
Yeah, if you will. Let us make man in our image, right?
Well, yes, in our image, right. That gets you into Sitchin a little bit, doesn't it?
Well, in other words, evidently there was more than one person involved in the creation, if that verse is to be taken literally.
Well, I've always wondered, parenthetically, I've always wondered why the early word for God in the Hebrew Bible is a plural.
Yes, greatness.
No, just plural. It was Elohim is another word for God, and it means gods, or you know, I'm having I like this I'm neither a creationist nor am I a whatever evolutionary guy. I think there's a third road here that deserves investigation.
Creationism, as defined here in the United States, includes some beliefs that are quite contrary to reason, really, when it comes to the literal interpretation of Genesis and so on. We don't have to get into that tonight, though.
No, but I kind of like the alien genetic engineering theory.
Well, you know, that's the religion that I was raised with. My dad was a ufologist. He was a rocket scientist and a ufologist, and I was raised on alien colonization of planet Earth.
Yeah, cool.
But I rejected it because I just didn't think it held water. And it didn't answer the ultimate question of who made everything, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So who made the aliens? You know,
exactly.
That's right. But you're very lucky. I had to swim upstream. After I saw my first UFO, which was when I was 12 years old, nobody believed me, and you know. My parents were deep in mainstream, but
so that's
right.
Why you include information about UFOs in your book.
Well, hey, look. Once you're into evidence, I'm not into UFOs per se. Okay, if something is interesting, intrinsically interesting, and bears fruit factually. Yeah, right. And the whole UFO is, that whole, the universe and all that, thank you, Doug Adams, is ultimately the most interesting thing that we can possibly get our head around, isn't it? Or not get our head around, or deny. You know, the greatest story ever denied. I think that's a DVD I was watching the other day. UFOs, the greatest story ever denied. but as a journalist, I'm going, oh wow, what are the best stories that come across my desk? And there's nothing more interesting than the UFO story, or the suppression of the free energy story, which basically is the same story, isn't it?
Well, that's what many people have concluded, that if there is some intelligent life that has visited this planet, they were using superior technologies that the governments, having discovered, have then suppressed.
Yeah, I know that theory, and it's a good one. I'm just reading Witness to Roswell, and we're going to review it in the next issue. Have you seen it yet?
No. In fact, you said you had mailed me that issue, correct?
No. We're going to be reviewing Witness to Roswell in the next issue.
Okay. Witness to Roswell is a film, is it?
No, it's a book. Just came out.
A book? No, I never heard of it.
Oh well, go Google that one up, man. It's very, very good. These guys know more about Roswell than anybody since I've read since Philip Corso's book, which was the day after Roswell. You know that book?
My thinking on the UFO thing is that I'm not interested in it because I was spoon fed it from the time I was a child, and so I've tended to be a little bit reticent about pursuing research into that subject because I actually had to fight, almost literally fight that teaching in order to break free from it as a religion. And so
it was taught to you as a religion?
Oh, yeah. I mean, God Drives a Flying Saucer was the name of one of my dad's books.
That's cool. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I got burned out on it when I was about 14. I started studying the Bible.
That's too bad because it's one of the most, if not the most interesting stories of suppression that I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, and I say, I'm very, very aware of it because my dad was working for the government in the space program at the same time that he had probably the world's largest library on UFO literature and was writing a book. He never finished it, but he was writing a book. And so,
how far did he get with it?
Not far enough for the rest of us to publish anything when he died, you know.
Oh.
But it's just that I don't feel like I have to pursue
it. But it got you on the track of the suppression of water technologies, didn't it?
Yeah, and I'll tell you another thing. I recently thought of this, that my father was a conventional scientist, but he held some very unconventional views, and I feel that the system that he was subjected to caused him to rebel and perhaps pursue things that didn't really have much of a basis, that were more National Enquirer, if, in case some international people don't know what that is. That's a tabloid publication that is full of some true stories and a lot of incredible ones. He would pick up
sort of like Fox News.
Yeah, there you go. He would
sort of like the New York Times.
Right, exactly.
But everybody uses the tabloids. My favorite tabloid, of course, is the Weekly World News.
Yeah, exactly.
But everybody uses the National Enquirer or something that's not credible. Well, Slim, the more I read the New York Times, the less credible it becomes.
Yeah, it's true. You're right. There's not much difference. But the point is that there was a time when he began to believe virtually anything that was in print or surrounding the subject without question. I don't think anyone should do that with regard to any subject.
That's right.
Any subject whatsoever that involves believing something that...
Absolutely. Einstein said...
And proven.
Yep. Well, nothing is ever proven. Everything is hypothesis, isn't it?
Yeah, right. Checked and at least... some reason to believe it, you know.
That's right. But check your sources. Check again. And check your own skepticism and your own willingness to believe.
Yeah,
always.
Let me give you an example.
That's what I worked for the best damn reporter in the United States. I apprenticed to him. And that's exactly what he told me, you know. Check
what
your sources.
Yes,
check your willingness to believe. Check your own skepticism. Check your own preconditions and your own prejudices. And then write the story.
Yeah, which I think is very good. And that's why I think we should devote the rest of the time in this interview to the checking that you did on water fuel technology and what you...
That's right. I was about to get back to the Joe show.
Let's get back to it. Okay.
Well, anyhow, I brought Neil over with me. We spent 3 days with Joey, all right? We took watched him charge the water in the cell, which he did with 3 telecom 75 volt battery, a battery charger, with 3 batteries on it. We saw how he purified the water. We actually tasted the water, which actually made our hair stand on end. We then took off all of the petrol from the Ford 1300 Escort, CC Escort. I think it was blue, and put a plug in the fuel line. I went around, got inside the car, started it up and ran the carburetor completely dry, and then tried 5 or 6 times to start it again. After which time. Neil and I hooked up the water, which was the cell, okay. And now let me backtrack for a second. That engine, the 1300 engine, was a clapped out 1300. It was blowing smoke like you wouldn't believe. It was a terrible little old car. All right. The tachometer redlined at about 5,500 to 6,000 RPMs. By redlining, I mean that the engine was screaming and didn't want to do any more.
Mm-hmm.
We hooked up the water, the cell, and the car started the first time. Nothing coming out the exhaust pipe except water vapor because it was raining, and I'll get back to that in a minute. Then Joey said, horse the piss out of it. So I got back in the car and tromped on the accelerator, and it just kept the rev counter, the needle just kept climbing until it went all the way through 10,000 RPMs and started coming up again to 11 and 12. All right. And that car sounded like a V12 Jaguar, I'm telling you. The in other words, it had a nice sweet turbine sound to it. Neil and I were completely flabbergasted. To the point of getting back to the word epiphany. Yeah, forget it. It was the ultimate, especially for both of us. Neil being a mechanic who didn't think it was possible, me knowing it was possible, but you know, experiencing it. The fact of the matter is, we took that car out, three of us, and it burned rubber starting off in third gear. We went about 3.5, 3.7 miles on water alone, drove it back into the shed because it was pissing down with rain at that point, back into his garage, and then celebrated for the rest of the day.
Consumption. You went 3 miles. Did you use a lot of water?
No. Joey didn't use any water. Well, very, very, very little water in his machine. The if your listeners are wondering how the hell it worked, I remember Joey using an analogy. He said, "Well, how does a magnet work? You take an iron bar and you put it next to some nails, and it does nothing until you magnetize it." And I've had experience of having to magnetize a coat hanger from my battery because I dropped some screws or nuts or bolts into my cylinder. You have to magnetize something and stick something down and pull it up, right? Coat hanger was for me. Joey said, "Okay, so you magnetize the iron bar, and all of a sudden it does work. Why is that?" So I thought about that for a few years, and I asked a few people, people who posed themselves as experts, and they would say, "Well, because you align the electrons." But the question, which is analogous to, who created the aliens, the question was, okay, so what if you align the electrons? Why does aligning the electrons allow an iron bar to actually lift up a shitload of nails? Okay, the question is begged by saying, well, it's you align the electrons. The real question is, why is it when you align electrons it does work? So I've never been able to answer that better than the explanation that Joey gave me. And the explanation that Joey gave me was that the magnet and his water act as conduits for free energy, all right? Conduits. A conduit is a window, all right? What you're doing is allowing the ambient energy in the universe, which is even in Tennessee, that energy to flow through the conduit, which in one case was a magnet, all right, and in Joey's case was the water, which is one of the reasons why he doesn't use water. He didn't use it up. Joey started off by making hydrogen, and he made quite a lot of it, and there were some very efficient-looking hydrogen generators, fuel cells that he built, and they were very, very nice to look at, and they produced a shitload of hydrogen. But eventually, he stopped making hydrogen, and I believe Joey was one of the earliest, if not the first person I ever saw who actually used neutral plates, which is something, I don't know if it's in the book or not, but yes, indeed, neutral plates. That is to say, positive, neutral, negative, neutral, positive, neutral, negative. Okay? Now,
yeah,
what the hell was...
Many doing that now.
What?
Many people are imitating that now in their little
hydrogen
boosters they're putting under their hoods.
Good. All right. The neutral plate was most interesting, but once again, let me reiterate that there was no hydrogen that was being made.
In other words, you're saying that...
There was no charge going into the water. What I'm saying is that he starts out in his early experiments putting a charge into the water, and he did this for about 3 or 4 days, okay? And every so often he would skim off whatever the residue was in that water, okay, and continue using electricity to purify the water to a heightened state of purification. I don't know if he talks about that in the book either. It's been years since I read it.
I've been reading so many web pages that discuss this that I can't remember whether it was in your book or not. But
well, it's not in the book. I didn't have an article on Joey in the book. I don't believe. I don't remember. That's a horrible.
I thought it was a Cortina though. That you mentioned in your book.
Did I say Cortina? Did I say Escort? No, it was an Escort.
Okay. It seems like
it's the little one.
Small car.
It was definitely a Ford Escort. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. No question about that for the petrol heads out there, it was an Escort.
But the way that you described it in the book, I think, is this same experience, yes.
Anywho, long story short, or long story long, depending on how much time we have left, the fact is that after he purifies the water, and this is a process that I was told takes 3 days, that water goes into a cell and he's no longer making hydrogen. Okay, that what's happened is that water, has had its electrons aligned to the point where it functions as analogous to the functioning of a magnet. In other words, that water, or what the charge coming off that water can drive a car. Impossible, you say? Well, I'm sorry. It not only was possible, but we did it, and we had the most wonderful experience of our lives.
Now, you pointed something out to me in our previous phone conversation last week, and I think it's important to go there now.
Oh, the disinfo.
You said that on the Internet there are rumors or explanations of how his system works, and these viewpoints are not truthful because they imply that you can have a blind plug on the hose coming from the Joe cell going to the engine. And you said that was never done by Joe. He always had a direct connection to the intake manifold.
Okay. That's exactly what I said.
So in other words, except for the word never.
I'm only telling you what we saw. I didn't say never. Okay?
What you saw worked, and what you saw was a direct connection from the cell to the intake manifold.
That's correct.
Although you're saying that hydrogen was not necessarily bubbling out of the cell.
No.
Some other form of energy may have been getting in there, but that there was a direct connection.
That's right. And what I was also saying was that Joe drove 1,500 miles using his cell and reported to us that he used about a half a liter, 500 mils, whatever that is, a pint of water. In other words, the water is not used up.
Well, no,
the same way a magnet can go.
That represents some water usage. A half liter.
When I asked him that, he said he hit some bumps and he was conjecturing that the water got in just as a mechanical response to irregularities in the road surface.
Oh, it got sucked in.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Well, apparently it is possible to harness the nuclear energy in water, and it could be that this is what's happening. In other words, there are different levels of power available from water. And
one of the greatest scientists of the 20th century was named Wilhelm Reich, R-E-I-C-H.
Uh-huh.
Is he on your site?
You know something? I haven't done a tremendous amount of research into Dr. Reich's work.
Okay, we'll do some and then link up to your site, because Wilhelm Reich invented something called the orgone box. An orgone box was simply a very large capacitor, a box made of alternating layers of conductive and non-conductive material. With no energy input other than that which it accumulated from the ambient atmosphere, the ambient energy field, if you will. All right? That was it. Sort of like, dare I say, the Ark of the Covenant, which was also an orgone box, which was also a capacitor. What happens is that if you build one of these things carefully enough, you can accumulate And he, in fact, he did call his box an orgone accumulator. You accumulate that energy, that ambient energy in the universe, the free energy or the zero point, if you will. And it's a very simple way of doing it, and that's what he did. I believe that Joey's cell, the Joe cell, was also accumulating, if you will, orgone energy or ZPE. The zero point energy is the energy that still is there when everything is frozen solid. It's the energy that keeps the electrons rotating around the nucleus of every atom instead of falling in on them eventually, okay?
So here's
the whole universe is energy. And and there's so much of it, then that's the big secret. That's what the nature is of this technological suppression syndrome, is that, boy, oh boy, once people realize and start putting into practice the knowledge that they can utilize the ambient energy in the universe and they don't have to pay any oil companies for it, my God, their whole house of cards comes crumbling down, doesn't it? And this is why people in Australia who have been driving cars running on the JOSO have been harassed and intimidated by the MIBs. If I could get back to your father's obsession, there are people in black suits who stop you on the road, who put a gun in your face and tell you to get rid of it, or they get rid of you. And there are a lot of people who have come across these erstwhile intimidators, and they stop. I've met several inventors who've been intimidated, their house burned down, they're in hiding. Joey himself reportedly was seriously intimidated, and his place was smashed to smithereens. After the visit, not because of the visit. This is reported. I have not confirmed that, nor have I spoken to Joey in about 10 years. Occasionally I get calls from people in Australia who tell me these things, and I haven't gone over there to check them out myself, but it wouldn't surprise me. There's a lot of if you're experimenting with this technology, and that's all right. But as soon as you file for a patent, if that's what you want to file for, then you're stopped instantaneously. If you don't want to file for a patent and you want to raise some money, you're stopped instantaneously. If you want to put it out publicly, you're stopped instantaneously. There's a chap in Australia had his car running on water. In fact, he demonstrated it to the governor of Queensland, which is in northern Australia, and the governor's name was Joe Bielke Peterson, and Peterson was on the front page of a Brisbane, Queensland, Australia newspaper, filling the petrol tank of his car from a garden hose. All right, and then driving off, running on completely on water alone.
Boy, would it be possible to get a copy of that article?
Oh God, yeah,
I would
probably.
Have a copy of that.
Yeah, yeah. You can Google up Peterson Joe Joblke. I think it's Bjelke. He was half Dutch. He was a New Zealand guy from a Dutch extraction. Went over, became governor of Queensland, and he was public, and shortly thereafter he was removed from office on some charges of trumped up, I believe, of corruption, and the inventor went into hiding. This happens again and again and again. What gave me some one last thing, James, Wilhelm Reich, the scientist who I mentioned a short while ago, who developed the orgone box, the orgone accumulator, which accumulated vast amounts of energy. Reich was a student of Sigmund Freud, by the way, and a well-known scientist in the 1940s and 30s and 50s. Reich emigrated to the United States from Nazi Germany. After the war, I believe. I'm not sure. I don't remember. But what happened was he had all of his books burned publicly by the FBI in the New York City incinerator, and thrown into jail for writing a book that they didn't like. This is the United States of America, Land of the Free, Home of the Brave.
Yeah, I think I remember reading about this. Uh-huh.
That's in my book. And Reich
died in
was
prison, or he got out and then died.
No, a few weeks before he was due to be released from prison, he died under the proverbial mysterious circumstances.
Yeah.
Now, back to free energy. Reich was one of the proponents.
5 minutes remaining. I wonder if
Reich was one of the proponents, the chief proponents of free energy, and he demonstrated that it had serious healing properties. The orgone accumulator was a box in which people with serious illnesses would go and spend a few sessions in there and be miraculously healed. So Reich was a threat to the medical establishment in so many ways. Reich was talking about character armor, where people armor themselves. And we started this conversation by talking about why people go into denial, because of how pleasurable it is. Well, most people are walking around in a carapace that is sort of like a lobster or crab or insect exoskeleton in a carapace of body on character armor that they use to stop themselves from investigating unwelcome new information that might knock them off their perch. What Joey did, and what all of these inventors have done that I've had a look at, most of them, not all of them, is demonstrate that, yes, even though you can develop something that is not only a quantum leap better than what we have, but is an eye-opener in the deepest and most meaningful sense of the word, unless you run into an enormous stroke of good fortune, you will be suppressed. The only way that I can see out of that is for those who are doing it to give it away and make it available, and as simple as possible, make it available for anybody, even those without a machine shop, to fabricate it themselves. The reason that I'm ending this interview with talking about Reich and Joey in that same sentence is to encourage your listeners to investigate the orgone accumulator, which is very, very simple to make if you have patience and a little bit of skill, and to have a look and see what the evidence is, not only for the Joe cell and for hydrogen, yes, of course, hydrogen, that goes without saying, but to get back to their own, workshop, if you will, or their friends, and at least promulgate the information, which is what you're doing, and you're doing so well, James.
Well, I appreciate that. Let me ask you just about two more inventors, though. Archie Bluth.
How much time do we have now?
We have a few minutes.
You said 5 minutes a minute ago.
I know, and we can push the envelope, because I think Archie Blue deserves a little attention. You're living in the same country where he produced a water-powered car, and you included information about him in your book. In fact, that's where I learned most of what I know about Archie Blue. Anything you want to mention briefly about him?
The most interesting thing that I found about Archie, and yes, I've interviewed Archie's daughter and the last person to work with him, and I even have a TV New Zealand clip of him driving his car on water for television New Zealand.
I'd love to see that.
When he went, what'd you say?
I'd love to see that.
That's a good idea. I'll find it. I'll make a DVD out of it. It's in this mess somewhere.
It deserves to be shared with the world.
You're right. You're right. That's right. Okay. Well, let's do that.
Okay, come on.
Hold on, I'll make a note of it so I don't forget. Find Archie tape. Archie video. All right. I'll do that hopefully the next few days, actually.
But go on to what you were going to say about knowing his daughter, interviewing his daughter.
I interviewed Archie's daughter down in Christchurch. Archie Blue, of course, was the first New Zealander to run his car completely on water. And interestingly enough, very few people Archie's invention definitely worked, but only sometimes. He came to America. He demonstrated it in the Jersey Islands, got some serious investment capital, demonstrated it for the Royal Automobile Club in England. I have their report that says he was getting 100 miles a gallon on water alone.
Wow.
All right?
Now, this is a very small vehicle, too, though, wasn't it?
In New Zealand, he was driving a Mini, and where he demonstrated it in the Channel Islands, I believe it was a Renault. Yes, they were under 1,500 cc's to be sure. The Mini was about 850 cc's.
Yeah,
but he was getting.
100 miles per gallon would translate to maybe half that in a larger car.
Oh, well under that.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter, though, it doesn't matter if he was driving a small car or a big car. He didn't use any petrol at all, did he?
Yeah,
not
yeah.
a drop. And for years, I tried to replicate it. I did not come close. I got, you know, the usual, bullshit 10% savings on making hydrogen. And I thought, oh, ho-hum, I'm making some hydrogen. Initially I thought, oh, look, lots of hydrogen, you know, and oxygen. Whoa, oh, my. Sort of like the Wizard of Oz. But the man behind the curtain was definitely still pulling the strings because I never got more than 10 or 12 percent improvement. And I noticed that people who have hydrogen add-ons don't really expect that much. And one of the people you had on your show was talking about how it cleans up the combustion and all that sort of happy horseshit. The fact of the matter is that Archie was driving his car 100% on water, and how the hell was he doing it? So I go down to Christchurch to interview the daughter. I have her on tape, too, somewhere, by the way. And she infuriates the hell out of me by telling me that Archie was so messy that after he died, she and her husband, and by the way, she was one of those people who have plastic on her couches, she and her husband went into Archie's to clean up the workshop, and they took it all to the dump.
Unbelievable.
So at that point in the video, you can see my shoulder beginning to rise as I'm lunging for the woman. But I don't, okay? I control myself. I'm still polite. But I learned something. And what I learned is that Archie spent a lot of his time, most of his time, in fact, away from Christchurch and away from New Zealand and away from the little girl who grew to hate him. And where did he spend it? He spent it in New York City. And
yes.
Where did he spend it in New York City? A few blocks from Nikola Tesla's workshop. And what did Archie do in New York? He had an electronics workshop there and store. How interesting. Archie had other inventions other than his water-powered car, and one of them was a wire recorder for, you know, like a tape recorder. And he had some patents on speakers. He was into acoustics. He was into electronics. And I found it very plausible that he could easily have gone to not only gone to some of Tesla's demonstrations, as anybody who was anybody ever did in New York at that time, but he might very well have copped some information directly from the great master himself.
Yeah, I'm not sure that their time in New York coincided. I think.
Oh yes! Hey! You're talking to Mr. History here. This was in 1933. Tesla was there until 1943 when he died at the Hotel New Yorker.
Wow! So you have done your homework, and it did coincide. Interesting. Okay, because I was
not only coincided. We're talking about five or six blocks.
Yeah, I was under the assumption that Archie Blue was in New York City, so like in the 50s or something.
No.
He
commuted back and forth to New Zealand. He spent most of his time in New York, having split from the wife,
yeah.
Or didn't split. You know, they had it was an on-again, off-again relationship. Mind you, at that time, it took a fair amount of time to get from New York to New Zealand. There wasn't this 12 hours overnight from Los Angeles.
Right.
It was a big schlep, and it was by boat. But the fact of the matter is, yes, he was there for many years, and so was Tesla. It was the same, and there was an overlap there of at least 10 and possibly 20 years.
It's very, very interesting. I'll tell you what I think Archie Blue's trick is, in case you want to know my opinion.
I do.
I think that Archie Blue, among others, discovered how to make deuterium gas, which is much, much more powerful than the hydrogen gas that comes out of most electrolyzers. But
yeah.
And I think the JoCell may be doing the same thing. And deuterium is so much more powerful than regular parahydrogen. It's capable of powering a vehicle with seemingly very, very little water usage at all.
How would he have been doing that?
Well, if you look up deuterium in just a common encyclopedia, you see, here's the interesting thing about it. People confuse heavy water with heavy hydrogen. Deuterium is heavy hydrogen. Heavy water is water made with heavy hydrogen. It is not
right.
The same thing.
Yeah.
Deuterium
okay. How do you think Archie and Joey would be making deuterium?
Okay, so it may be very difficult to make heavy water, but I don't think it's so difficult to make heavy hydrogen. I think one encyclopedia says all you have to do is perform prolonged electrolysis on water.
Well, that's what Joey was doing.
Well, how do you do prolonged electrolysis? When you electrolyze water, the hydrogen goes away, right? How are you doing prolonged electrolysis? You have to reintroduce the hydrogen back into that water. And
not necessarily.
Well, that's
not necessarily at all. You're creating hydrogen and oxygen, sure, through the electrolysis, but you're also doing something to the actual molecular structure
itself.
Of the water.
Yeah,
right.
That's true also, yeah.
Now,
anyway,
there's another invention, and I think you should have a look at it. Go look up, Google up Griffin, Griffin, and water, and he has a patent. He's in the United States, 1994, I believe, conditioning water without just with a bi- or trimetallic process.
Are you talking about the retired
and this
chiropractor,
is this,
Griffin?
What'd you say?
Are you talking about the retired chiropractor, Griffin, Dr. Griffin?
No, general, military guy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there's a Griffin who just recently, Leonard Griffin.
Yeah, I think so. Yep, Leonard Griffin, yeah.
Okay, yeah, his patent is just from this past year.
He keeps updating them.
I see. Okay, so he actually goes back a ways, huh?
Yeah, I think so. And he's conditioning water, and I think analogous to the way Joey was doing, but this guy's conditioning it without any electrolysis, but just the reaction of the different metals or alloys.
Apparently there could be some connection there.
I believe there is. I think we're onto something, or he's onto something at least. And but once again, you know, where the hell is it? You know, what are they waiting for?
You've shared
why not
information,
do
though, about Archie Blue that I think people need to hear, that there is more documentation than we realize about his work. There's more to it than what the public knows, and it would be good to share some of those things that you recorded, those interviews. That would be great.
Oh, okay. I'll do that. I'll do that, James. I really will. I don't want to, you know, take too much more time from your daily schedule, but I will. Maybe we could do a twin spin or a part two or something.
That would be great. One more thing we want to mention though is the fact that you do have a magazine. It's called Uncensored, and it's available from your website, right?
Yeah, uncensored.co.nz, or you just want to hit up Uncensored on Google and you'll see it, yeah.
Okay. And you had an article on the current issue about Daniel Dingell, is that right?
Yeah, I don't have enough money to go up to the Philippines, but I sure would like to verify that and to see if this guy could use some help if it's true.
Yeah, that would be very interesting to research. I think there's some information coming out about him in an upcoming documentary.
Good. And that'll be posted on your site?
Actually, it appears that a major studio is about to. I think they're heading into post production on this documentary. And
what do you know about it? What's it called?
Actually, we did an interview with the producer of the documentary. It's able to be accessed through the archives of the Blog Talk Radio program.
Yeah.
And it's the interview with Chris Patton.
Yeah.
So you can go back and hear it. It's an hour-long interview. Uh-huh.
But you're talking about a video, right?
Yeah, it's an upcoming video. Mm-hmm. But there's an interview with the producer of that video. So if you want to hear some of the details about it, he discusses it in that interview.
Can you send me the URL?
Yeah, sure will. Go to blogtalkradio.com, and in the search box, type in water fuel, and it'll show all the different segments that have been recorded.
I did that the other day, yeah. Yeah. I listened to that chap from Australia that you had on.
Mark Dancy.
I don't remember his name, but I don't know. He was trying I don't think he was up with the plot, tell you the truth.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's important to get other voices such as yours, and I appreciate you joining us. And let's do another one. Let's have another discussion of some of the other things that you've seen and
No worries. I'll put the video together for you and send it down the line.
You have 300 minutes left on your card, right?
And your PO box is on and your contact details are on water fuel.
Yeah, waterfuelmuseum.org. Uh-huh.
There you go, waterfuelmuseum.org. All right. Yeah. Well, thank you very, very much for this, James. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I hope that this results in more people ordering your book and benefiting from all the interesting information that's in it.
Well, I hope so, too. You take good care of yourself.
Yeah, and let's get back together again in the future. And thanks for joining us on tonight's program.
Okay, thanks, James. Bye-bye.
Bye.